Hello, and welcome to the Dance Medicine Oral History Project, presented by the International Association for Dance Medicine and Science. This is your host, Marissa Schaefer. On this episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing physical therapist Sean Gallagher. He is the founder and director of Performing Arts Physical Therapy, a physical therapy studio that has cared for scores of Broadway shows and dance companies across New York. He is also the owner of the New York Pilates Studio. And I'll let the rest speak for itself. I hope you enjoy. Welcome, Sean, and thank you so much for being here. Would you mind introducing yourself, please?
Sure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Well, I'm Sean Gallagher. I've been a physical therapist since 1986. I got a degree in dance and physical therapy at the same time at Temple University, and also did my hours for athletic training during that period. So it took me about 6 years to get both degrees in the athletic training, but that's sort of what I wanted to do. I got injured as a dancer and the doctor told me to stop dancing. And I said, there had to be better answers than that. So that's the path I started to follow.
Did you just say that you got your bachelor's, you did athletic training, physical therapy, and dance all at the same time?
I did.
Did you sleep?
Well, you know, it took me 6 years, yeah. So it took a little longer than, you know, normal, but, you know, I basically did most of my dance, credits, mm-hmm. and then left one class at the end so I could still get, you know, some support for financial support.
Sure.
But then when I was, in one of my classes, one of my fellow classmates was doing the athletic training and he started telling me about it. I was like, I think that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And they had a scholarship. So I got school paid for, you know, I have a school paid, 3 years worth of tuition. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to pay housing and everything else, but I had that, which helped a lot. So I did that with, you know, the athletic training and the dance sort of together. And then, you know, when I was ready, you know, the last 2 years was the PT, you know, because back then it was bachelor's. So you basically did 2 years of prerequisites and 2 years of focused, concentrated PT training. So I, you know, did most of the athletic training and dance first. And then the last semester, I took my last dance class as well, so that I graduated with both degrees.
Excellent. So there's a fair amount of overlap between athletic training and physical therapy. What made you want to pursue both?
Well, you know, back then there wasn't as much of an overlap, and you know, there was no dance medicine really back then. Mm-hmm. So what you had was, you know, the sports. And what I did is I became the student trainer for the men's gymnastics, because that was as close as you could get the dance at the time, mm-hmm. for injuries. And, you know, the athletic training has come a long way, and so has PT. I mean, you know, PT was undergraduate, now it's doctorate. Athletic training, you know, you had a certificate. Mm-hmm. Now you get a degree and, you know, there's masters and everything else. I mean, there was masters back then, but it wasn't like it was at PT at the time. So, you know, it was different and it was a much different thing. And, you know, athletic training was mostly was sports back then. I know that, you know, it's expanded quite a bit, but it was mostly just sports. I mean, that's what when I was doing my hours, I didn't treat anybody that was older than 25, I think, because they were all students. You know, it was a different thing. You know, when I got into Broadway, you know, it was a full range of population. You know, it was a whole different modality in relationship to who you treated and who you didn't, things like that. I even had Mary Jean Lederbacher wanted to come before she was a PT as an athletic trainer. I said, I really can't hire you because you haven't had the training, you know, for the range of the population as an athletic trainer, you know. And then she went in, she ended up becoming a PT. So, you know, that took care of that problem. But, you know, then she went and did her own thing at Harkness. So, you know, it was a whole different, you know, she did her own thing that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, you know, I wanted to be able to treat performers, you know, dancers mostly. And then, you know, I started with the Pennsylvania Ballet, and then I worked, you know, when I did my my affiliation, I did with Marika Molnar at City Ballet. And, you know, that was when she'd been there for a couple of years, you know, and she taught me a lot of great, you know, I mean, she was a manual therapist. She got me into the manual therapy and did a lot of that stuff. I mean, you know, I was there for what, I think eight weeks. Yeah. So 8 weeks. And then I would, you know, she talked to Ricky Weiss, who was the director at Pennsylvania Ballet. And he hired me when I graduated. And, you know, my first job was the Pennsylvania Milwaukee Ballet because they had merged. So we would travel between, you know, Philadelphia and Milwaukee once a month. And then at Nutcracker time, it was like I would travel with the principals. So it was like every third or fourth day we would fly back and forth.
Was, you know, when you were treating Pennsylvania Ballet back then, were you the first PT? Was there someone before you?
I was the first. Okay. Well, you know, I was the first. Marika, you know, Marika got it. And I'm sure you'll probably talk to her. And I, you know, my understanding is that before they hired Marika, they had an athletic trainer, and the athletic trainer left, and Marika was teaching, I believe, gymnastics at the school. And then she was a PT. So they asked her if she wanted to be do the therapy for that, you know? So I'm pretty sure that, I mean, I'm sure you'll get a better understanding of that, but that's what I remember. So.
Gotcha. But, so what was it like being a pioneer at Pennsylvania Ballet?
Well, you know, it's interesting because now it's expected.
Right.
Then it was like, oh my God, they were like, some of them would bow and call me Shahib and like bow down and like pray to me and do all sorts of funny things and, you know, crazy stuff like that, you know, because, you know, I was there to help them and they'd never had that before. And, you know, some of the dancers when I got there had been there for, you know, their whole careers almost. So they had, you know, worked through, I remember one of the, I can't remember his last name right at the moment, but you know, he'd had multiple stress fractures in his shins and he just danced through them until they got better.
Wow.
You know, and that's, you know, dancers weren't taken care of. There was no dance medicine. I went to a dance medicine conference in, I believe it was 1980. And it was like one of the first ones in Philadelphia. And it was all sports medicine guys. And they're like, well, it's the same injury, so we treat it the same way. And I was like, no, it's not the same. You know, it's not really the same. And you can't, they do things differently.
Right.
So, you know, and when I was doing all my continuing education, I was the guy that was always asking, well, have you ever worked with dancers? And the answer was always no.
Right.
Because they didn't do it. And do you have any ideas or ways of thinking about how to do it? Usually the answer was no. So I would, you know, take these, you know, I would spend, you know, I have a 7 or 8 page resume full of just continuing education I took over the years. And, you know, learning those techniques, I would then go back and integrate them and apply them and try to figure out how to use what they were teaching for the dancers, which was different than the populations they were really, you know, providing the information for. So it was sort of having to that cross-pollinization of taking, you know, what's new in PT, because, you know, manual therapy wasn't that prevalent back then. You know, I was lucky because, you know, I was in PT school from 84 to 86. And one of my electives was the spinal manipulation class, which was rare back then.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Marika, you know, turned me on to, you know, Michigan State. So I went to Michigan State, did all the osteopathic training there. I also did one of my affiliations was with John Barnes. So I was with him when he was just getting started.
Wow.
So, you know, all the fascial work and the manipulation and that type of stuff, which is really what works really well for the performers to really because they're, you know, all that dancing and that habituation is, you know, throwing their bodies out of whack, you know, over time and, you know, having to try to facilitate that back into, you know, a resemblance of normality. Is, you know, was something that really wasn't done before.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, so how long were you at, or how long were you in Pennsylvania, I guess, first?
Well, you know, I started, let me go back to where I started dancing.
Sure,
so,
yes.
You know, I left home at 17 and I went to Colorado and then I moved to Montana. And I worked and built houses and construction and a bunch of different things. And when I'm 21, I was like, I need to go back. You know, I wasn't at 21, but I was like, I have to go back to school because, you know, I needed to get an education.
Sure.
And, you know, I said, well, let me do what's easy. You know, I'll do theater. Uh-huh. Because, you know, I originally wanted to be a forest ranger, but you had to take organic chemistry. And I'd been out of school for 3 years or so. And I was like, yeah, I'm not ready for that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me take something easy. And I said, theater, you know, looks like fun. I'd never done it. My parents, you know, my mother was not, you know, we went to the movies, you know, she went to movies once a year. I'd never been to, as a matter of fact, I worked on a Broadway show before I saw a Broadway show. So, I mean,
wow.
That's sort of where I was coming from. And, you know, I never knew what a dance company was or anything like that. Uh-huh. But in theater, you had to take a dance class. Mm-hmm. So I took contact improv. Uh-huh. And it was, you know, me and 20 girls rolling around on the floor, you know, doing all sorts of wild,
so
crazy
true.
Stuff. And so then I set up, so then I signed up for another class, which was technique class. And that was, you know, I'm like, wait a minute, what happened to roll around on the floor? You know, I had to stand up and, you know, plie and kick my leg and do all, you know, but by then I was sort of, you know, I really liked doing it. It was something different, you know, so, and I was never really that athletic, you know, growing up, I was more of a juvenile delinquent and, you know, party hardy guy. Uh-huh. So when I went to Montana, I, you know, that's when I stopped drinking and doing drugs and smoking and all that stuff. And I cleaned myself up and I've been, you know, straight for 41 years now, or 42, I guess.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
But you know, and that's one of the things that I did. Dance helped me sort of get past through all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then my teacher there was like, you know, if you really want to dance, this is not the place to do it. And she was right, Montana, there just wasn't anything. And she had gone to Temple, and I'm from Philly. So Temple was, you know, I went home, I went back to, you know, so I was at University of Montana for a year and a trimester. Mm-hmm. So then I went back to Philly and I enrolled into Temple, and I started at Temple. And Temple was, you know, really great because since it is that a university with a broad base of colleges, I was able to do, you know, and, you know, the dance, the athletic training and the PT and sort of find my own way and make it happen. And, you know, and it happened over time, you know, because I got hurt and the doctor said, don't dance and, you know, pull your knees to your chest for, you know, for whatever period of time and you'll be fine. And it was like, I didn't have insurance. It cost me $150 back then, which was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's got to be better answers. Mm-hmm. There just has to be. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started looking into it. And then I found athletic training and then PT and, you know, then there, and, you know, the rest sort of evolved from there. And then, so when I was in Philly for about a year and a half, and the problem is, you know, I wanted to have a clinic.
Right.
And because it was the Pennsylvania Milwaukee Ballet, you know, what we provide in PT is it's a service business. And you can't say, oh, well, I'll be back in a month to take care of that sprained ankle.
Oh, yeah, no.
Right? It just doesn't work.
Right.
So, you know, and I was, 30 by then? I guess I was 30 or 31. So I was, you know, debating it. And I decided, you know, I really wanted to have a clinic. I couldn't, or at least work in a clinic. I couldn't do that in Philly, mm-hmm. with the ballet. And, you know, because even if I didn't go back and forth and I stayed in Philly, you know, the ballet has, you know, 40 dancers,
right.
45 or whatever it was. And, you know, they're not all injured at the same time. You know, you have one or two or three that have an injury. You know, that's not going to, you know, take care of a clinic. You're not going to be able to run a business, you know, because it's also a business, right? You're running a business and that makes it difficult. So, and there really wasn't any other dance in Philly that had workers' comp or dancers with insurance or anything else like that either. You know, that was, so it was very, it was not something that was easy to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I ended up, you know, having a clinic there, and later on, I went back. I mean, I left and went to, I went to New York, and I, you know, started working with Marika. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was at City Ballet for about 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and she was on the east side, and you know, I went to her and, you know, asked to, you know, try to talk to her about, you know, trying to do some sort of partnership or anything, and she wasn't interested. So I left and did my own, and I went to the west side, and then soon after she moved to the west side. Uh-huh. You know, and when she, you know, when that didn't happen, I sort of didn't try to go and work where I had trained at City Ballet and that kind of stuff. I went and looked elsewhere. So that's when I started. You know, I worked with some dancers with Paul Taylor. So I started working with Paul Taylor a lot. And then, you know, Jerome Robbins was the ballet master at City Ballet. And when they were doing his show, some of the dancers came in and, you know, was like, you should come and do this. And I was like, okay. So, and then they called me and I started working at Jerome Robbins Broadway. You know, and that was the first Broadway show to have physical therapy. Broadway had had massage therapists before, but they didn't really have physical therapy, you know, so I was the first PT to work on Broadway.
Wow. What was the infrastructure of that like?
The infrastructure of that? Well, you know, when I first came, it was funny because, you know, it was before they were in the city and they were still up at SUNY Purchase. So they sent a car for me and I would see Jerry first. Uh-huh. And then I'd see the performers. Uh-huh. You know, and then when we got to the theater, I mean, it was in the Imperial, which is one of the smaller theaters on Broadway. And there were 65 dancers.
Oh,
I mean, it was
gosh.
Basically, everybody in there was a dancer pretty much. Yeah. Just about everybody. You know, Jason Alexander, who, you know, he was the MC and he wasn't really a dancer, but almost everybody else was because it was Jerry's shows, right? His dancing, his choreography. So, you know, I had this small little space in the basement, you know, and there was like a, underneath the stage, there was a warm up area where they would all warm up and I just had a table off to the side. Hmm. And I almost didn't stay because one of the performers got hurt during rehearsal, and I was like, you know, you really shouldn't dance on that, you know, you really can't be working on that thing. So he left, and Jerry freaked out. It was like, mm-hmm. Who told him to go home? And you know, and I basically said, listen, I'm gonna say what I need to say. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't like that, well then, you know, I guess you can find somebody else. And the general manager says, listen, just you know, be good, and you know, in 2 weeks everything will be different. And it was, because that's when Jerry was gone and they opened and it was a whole different story. And I even had an ongoing joke with the stage manager, Beverly Randolph, who has passed, but you know, and our thing was, she would come to me and she would say, Sean, if it was you, would you dance? And I'd say, Beverly, if it was me, I would. And then she would understand what that meant. Mm-hmm. That meant that person shouldn't really be dancing at mm-hmm. the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that was the thing. It was like, do you take somebody out for a day?
Right.
And they're back in a day or two, or do they, you leave them in and then they make it worse and they're out for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, and so that, you know, it was sort of like they needed a PT for that show. You know, they needed something. And so I was there three hours a day, you know, and I would start and I would go through the first intermission. I would stay through the first intermission. So I knew the first act really, really well.
Sure.
Didn't know the second act too well, but I knew the first act, you know, and then let's see, you know, I had, so that was about a year and a, almost a year and a couple months, I think, before they went on tour. Uh-huh. And so that was the beginning. And, you know, I was pretty much working full time, pretty much. When I did go to do courses and stuff, Shaw Bronner,
Yeah.
I gave her her first, you know, gig on Broadway because she covered for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we had met at NYU because I helped teach the anatomy class there, you know, as one of the lab assistants. Maybe we took the same class. I can't remember whether it was we took the same class or she took one afterwards and I was helping out. I can't remember exactly, but, you know, it was around that time.
So this was before she started at Yale?
Oh, yeah. Way before.
Wow. So I'm curious, too.
I don't know how way before, but it was, I don't remember when she started, but it was, you know, she hadn't worked on Broadway. I mean, I was the first one working on Broadway and working, you know, and, you know, I'd worked with Paul Taylor and stuff. I started working with Paul Taylor. I was with Taylor for almost 26 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm curious, you know, in that first Robin's, you know, Broadway show, did dancers come to you just when they were injured or did they come to you like prophylactically for prehab?
Well, it's still like it is today. There are some people who take advantage of the service.
Sure.
And there's some who don't. There was one of the performers, he broke his foot and he, you know, there was a mentality back then that you didn't miss a show no matter what. And he broke his foot and he danced on it for a week and a half. Jeez. And I said every day, you know, Beverly and I had that conversation. It's like, I would not be dancing on that foot, but she couldn't stop him, you know, because of union rules and other things. You can't tell somebody they can't do something.
Right.
You know, and it finally got to the point where it was so swollen and so bad and it was, you know, it was just terrible. And he just couldn't even walk on it. So then he finally had to stop. But there was a mentality that way. And, you know, there's less of that today.
Right.
But it used to be because before me, they didn't have anybody. So you just, you know, you had to do it. That's what you did. And most of them did it.
Right.
Now it's a different story. Now it's like, where's the PT as soon as the show starts? Right.
Right. Totally.
You know, so, which is great. I mean, it's that, you know, look, you know, when I started, I was the first one. I did a lot and I now have competitor. There's lots of competitors, a lot of other people out there trying to do the same thing. And you know, my feeling is as long as they're getting taken care of, that's what matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's really, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I'd like to still be working and I still am. So, you know, I'm not worried about it, but you know, at this, you know, that's the deal. It's like, we're here to take care of the performers and, you know, whatever that is. And you know, as one person can't do it all. Nope. I mean, at one point I had, you know, three clinics in Manhattan and, you know, eight or nine PTs. And I covered a lot of shows and I no longer do that. You know, after 9/11, you either got to be really big or really small. And I decided to be really small and spend the time with my kids and my family instead.
Mm-hmm. So many questions. The first is, so after that first Broadway show, did things snowball or did you have to do a lot to kind of?
No. It was, well, the next show I did was, I'm blanking for a second here. Will Weiser's Follies. And I was probably had half the girls in the clinic because for Broadway, there was no place for Broadway people to go. Marika was at City Ballet and she didn't really do Broadway, you know, and so I was taking care of Broadway. And so people, you know, and it's the dance world's fairly small and, you know, it doesn't take long for people to find out about the person who somebody's seen or doing or if they're doing good or whatever. And so I had, half the girls in Will Rogers coming to me because, you know, they had stairs on the stage and then they were in what's the name of the theater, but I can't remember right offhand, but. It was all stairs. So they had, you know, hundreds of stairs every night. Ugh. And they were having all sorts of legs and knee and foot and ankle issues and things and low back, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I went and I interviewed with the general manager and he interviewed me and a massage therapist. And he said to me, I think you're overqualified because I basically came in and said, you know, I can do the manual work. I will, you know, teach them exercises. We can do also, you know, I'll do all the things that need to be done, you know, to take care of the problem, you know, and and I was obviously more expensive. And, you know, Broadway is not for profit. So, well, not for profit doesn't pay the dance companies are even tougher time. But even then, they didn't want to spend the money, right? Because it was, what do we need that for? You know, dance, they just, you know, do it. Right. I mean, they have since realized that, you know, the cost, you know, one of the ways I got it to do more was to explain to them and show the management that, you know, if one performer has to take a medical leave, the cost to the company for that is what they're going to pay me for the year.
Right.
You know, so if I can save one or two or three or four people every year from having to take a medical leave by doing the maintenance and, you know, taking care of and saying, take that day and not, you know, take the day off for 2 days before, you know, and, you know, take a rest,
right.
Let it heal up, let it get better. So that was part of it, you know, so, and so he said I was overqualified. He hired a massage therapist. Mm-hmm. Well, 4 months later, he called me back and said, I think I want to hire you because, you know, everybody was getting the massage, but nothing was changing. They were still having all the issues and the problems, and the girls were still coming to my clinic, and there was, you know, so, you know, and then once I started at the show, you know, it got better.
Yeah.
You know, because I was able to do more than just massage. You know, I did massage, I did manipulation, I did modalities. You know, I used to take modalities until they started to get stolen, and then I stopped bringing them with me.
Right.
You know, because it got very expensive.
Sure.
You know, but and that happened at Will Rogers. I had a ultrasound and a stim machine stolen. That was locked up. So, you know, and I've even had a massage table disappear backstage.
Oh gosh.
It's like, how does somebody get that out of the theater without anybody knowing it?
I don't know.
But they did. Right. So, I mean, you know, but that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
but you know, that's what I did. And then, you know, I would call and I'd have people, you know, managers hang up on me like, no, we don't need that. Click. Goodbye, you know.
Right.
And it didn't happen for a long time. And, you know, now it's in the contract. You know, it took 20 years, mm-hmm. but it's in the contract now that if you have dance, if there's dancing in the show, they have to have a PT. Limited amount. I mean, I think it's 2 hours. They have to have 2 hours a week because, you know, Phantom opened when I first started, mm-hmm. right around when I was first starting. And they, you know, I tried and I knew that, you know, one of the company managers that was at Will Rogers eventually went there and I knew them and I tried and, you know, they weren't interested. They weren't going to do it.
Right.
And they didn't until they were required to, you know, and even then, you know, it was, you know, you could tell they weren't happy about it, but now, you know, they realize it's beneficial and they would all come to the office instead. You know, so, but now they see it and they have to, you know, I don't know if they didn't have to do it, would they keep doing it now? I don't know, but I know that they see the benefit.
Right. Did you play any role in getting PT in the contracts?
No, I did not really. I mean, there was a few times I was asked to, like, you know, come and talk between the board in equity.
Uh-huh.
I did that twice and will never do it again because if I fully retire and I don't have to, you know, because I work for the performers.
Right.
But I also work for the producers.
Right.
They pay me.
Right.
And they both have expectations. And if you don't meet that expectation, there's, you know, there's pushback on both sides.
Right.
And I just don't, and you know, and I'm like, I want to just be neutral. I want to come in and take care of people and, you know, do what I need to do. And I don't want to get into the politics, and that's all that was all politics.
Yeah.
So I tried to avoid that. First time was about rake stage. And I basically said, well, you know, a rake stage is not good. It's not good for you. You shouldn't do it. But if you are going to do it, there are things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the management didn't like that. And the performers didn't like that. So, you know, it was like you're between a rock and a hard place.
Sure.
But, you know, and I didn't play the politics. You know, I just basically tried to be, you know, this is how it is. And, you know, I was the first one to start, you know, like now when they have a rake stage, they're required to do a rake stage lecture. I was the one who started that, you know, and made that, you know, and first, you know, did all those, you know, now other people do it, but that, you know, I started doing the rake stage lecture. you know, injury prevention. You know, I have a pamphlet. I have all these exercises. I've all, you know, programs that I've done for, you know, all the different shows over the years. To, you know, really facilitate that. I mean, you know, I'm the person who started using foam rollers for self-massage. You know, I did my Feldenkrais training in 97 and, you know, oh no, not 97, 87 to 91.
Oh, wow. All the way at the beginning.
Yes. And I, you know, and in Feldenkrais, they use the rollers to put underneath your legs. Mm-hmm. For support when you rely on the table. So, you know, wouldn't put so much stress on your lower back for your psoas and that type of thing.
Sure, sure.
You know, so it was under your knees and your ankles. And then they used them for standing to work on balance only. And then I started playing around with them. And I was like, wow, this is great. You can use this for massage. And so, I started to take it to, I took them to, I bought a couple and I took them to Jerome Robbins Broadway and, you know, showed the dancers. And they were like, you know, I couldn't get them back.
Yeah.
You know, so, and you know that, so then, you know, and then in 96, I did Orthopedic Clinics of North America, Physical Therapy North, I don't even remember, I have to look at the exact title, but, you know, it was a journal where we're doing different articles and things. And there was two sections on performing arts that I was the editor for. You know, one for dance and one for music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's when I first published the, you know, using the foam roller, you know, on that level way before, you know, it started being popular. So
sure.
Now it's everywhere.
It's
I should have written the book.
Everywhere.
I should have written the book back then.
You did. You should have. You should have.
Yep.
Were you in music too? Did you treat a lot of musicians?
Well, I started the therapy program at Juilliard.
No way.
Yeah. And then I also did the therapy up at SUNY Purchase, you know, for the dance program at SUNY Purchase. Uh-huh. And both schools have music programs. So I took care of the musicians as well.
No way.
I also had to, you know, like now at Juilliard, they have, you know, when they built the new, you know, they built a new building, the Rose Building, and they put a whole section for PT specifically.
Right.
When I started it, I think it was 91. Mm-hmm. It was 91 or 92. You know, there was the nurse's office, which was a small little room. And then I would have to go, use one of the rehearsal rooms, small rehearsal rooms where they, you know, and so I was surrounded by, you know, people practicing the same thing over and over and over again for hours. So, you know, and, but I would see the, you know, but they would all walk by and be like, oh, what's it? You know, so I worked, you know, when I would work with the musicians. So I did a lot with the musicians as well, but mostly dance still, but also musicians in both programs. So yeah, I was at both of those. I did Juilliard and Purchase for 8 or 9 years, I think.
Wow. You did not sit still. There's a lot of commuting in your life, I feel.
Well, I did a lot, you know, I mean, but, you know, there was nobody doing it and there was a need. And I was like, okay, you know, do you need this? Let's do it. You know, and, you know, part of that was I worked with Dr. Weiss at Juilliard, you know, so we did that. I also, you know, there was the Miller Institute, which was an institute where the St. Luke's Roosevelt was given an endowment to do a performing arts clinic. Medicine clinic. Mm-hmm. And I ran the PT program there. You know, we had a whole PT program, you know, for that. So that was, you know, Dr. Bauman would do the orthopedics, Dr. Thornton, and you know, was the doctor that did like the general medicine there, you know, and there was other people, you know, there was different other doctors there doing different things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a lot for musicians as well. It was musicians and dancers. So I took care of the musicians there as well.
Wonderful.
So, you know, the hospital ran out of money and I guess they used up the endowment. So it ended up closing, but it was a great, you know, at the time it was a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that was down on 57th Street.
57th.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to how did your relationship with Juilliard and Purchase start?
Well, Juilliard was kind of through Dr. Weiss, I believe. Mm-hmm. You know, they decided they wanted to do a therapy, and you know, I was working with, you know, Dr. Weiss had covered a couple, you know, he covered Will Rogers for me, and you know, so you know, there was relationships. So you know, he sent me, you know, I interviewed with the nurse, and she liked me and Joy, and you know, it went from there. And then you know, you know, politics and things change, so
sure,
I eventually left.
Sure.
And at SUNY Purchase, I was running the Pilates studio there.
Yes.
And I, you know, and I talked to Carol, who was the director, and we talked, and you know, we ended up, and we worked it out so that I could also do the PT for the students, because mm-hmm. you know, so that's sort of what I, you know, I sort of did that with the Pilates program. That's more how I got through, because I had a girlfriend at Temple who transferred to Purchase, and she then met, you know, there was a student there who was also, you know, learning Pilates and, you know, working in the city. And he started, he couldn't do a business because he was a student. So he had a student club. So he had a club that ran the Pilates studio, because Purchase was the first, you know, university to put the Pilates equipment in there. Cause when the director, when it first started, wanted to have the best for dancers, mm-hmm. you know, the best of everything. And so he put a Pilates studio in there because, you know, so many dancers had used Joe and you know, the studio and Romana and everybody to, you know, to prevent injuries and, you know, stay in shape. You know, matter of fact, that's how, you know, I found out about Pilates, because I was in New York taking dance classes. And this was, before I got into PT school in 84. And a friend of my mother's lived like across the street from Cunningham Studios. So I would go and spend the weekend, and he let me stay at his place, and I'd take class. And he's like, well, you should read this magazine. There's an article about this exercise system dancers use. And it was about Pilates and how it was used to prevent injuries and help them stay in shape, which is exactly what I was going to PT school for. So, you know, and then I went and, you know, found out about it and, you know, met Ramon, and I went and Lori Coleman, who was the girlfriend, she was like, you need to come up here because you can come and work out here. There's a studio. So I started coming up and working there. And then eventually Steve Giordano was the student. When I opened my practice in 90, we shared a space. We shared the space together. So I had the PT and he had the Pilates. Mm. So I had Pilates connected with my, you know, therapy practice from the very beginning. Because as I believe then and I believe now, as far as, you know, general exercise for the majority of people, it's one of the best things you can do. There's not, you know, there's not much better than Pilates when it comes to, you know, learning how to function and move with, you know, with the system that he developed and invented, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is a wonderful system. So we've been dancing around it. And we're going to get back to the Pilates in a little bit, I am sure. But
okay,
you mentioned like in the beginning that you always wanted a clinic, and then you opened one in 90. So what was the precipitating event, and what was that like starting your clinic?
Well, I moved to, you know, I was on the West Side. I lived on 73rd between Columbus and Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, when I approached Marika and she was like, no. I was like, okay. So I started looking and I was like, well, I should go over to Steps, because Steps was on 74th, uh-huh. and see if they have anything. And I went to Steps and they didn't, but they said, you know, there's a woman downstairs that's leaving, Rita Colby Ballet. She had her own little dance studio. I mean, you know, back then, you know, you could afford to have studios. I mean, there was a lot of private dance studios. I would take class all the time, all over the city with these, everybody had their own little place, but you know, then the rents just got crazy and worse and worse. But so she moved out, and I was on the second floor of the same building as Steps. And I, you know, there was 1,000 square feet.
Wow.
And then, you know, the place next door moved out. We took that over, and then another place moved out and I took that over, you know, and then I started at the Miller Institute. And then I then also opened up down at 890 Broadway, because that was where a lot of places, you know, rehearsed those shows at, you know, at one point rehearsed down there. Mm-hmm. So to have a, you know, office downtown, then in the 50s and then in the 70s. So it was sort of, you know, I was trying to, you know, cover, you know, all the different places.
Sure.
You know, and then, you know, I had, let's see, you know, at one time I had 14 or 15 shows. Now I have three or four. So, mm-hmm. but you know, I had three clinics and a lot of PTs. You know, I started the therapy at Radio City. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, so, and then I did therapy at, let me see where else I've done therapy. We did it at Six Flags, uh-huh. Sesame Street. You know, we did Sesame Street Live. You know, so I did touring shows. You know, I did when I'm with, you know, I did, but I had the contract for both of Lion King, you know, touring shows when they first started.
Wow. What was the infrastructure like at your clinic? So you obviously were treating people who were on shows, performance, et cetera. Did you take workers' comp? Did you?
Yeah. Not? Well, you know, when I first started, most people didn't like workers' comp because when I first started, you know, you put your insurance bill in and they pay whatever you bill.
Right.
So, you know, there were people billing $300, $400, $500 for a visit and getting it.
Holy moly.
And workers' comp was, you know, I mean, workers' comp fees just went up like a year ago. Mm-hmm. And they had been the same for almost 20 years.
Wow.
Maximum you could get for any kind, you know, session, you know, so a lot of people didn't want workers' comp and didn't like it. And, you know, and I never did this for the money, really. You know, I mean, you got to pay the bills and everything else, but yeah. So it was finding a way to, you know, to make that work. And what I would do was, you know, I would supervise I would have them do the hands-on manual therapy when they were ready and they were ready to start to transition from, you know, the basic exercises. You know, I do a lot of Feldenkrais work. I do a lot of exercises I've made up and you know, over the years for dancers, because there wasn't anything. So I came up with a lot of different things that were specific for their particular, you know, their needs, depending on what style of dance they're doing. You know, I mean, because there's a difference between what a ballet dancer has to do and a tap dancer and a modern dancer. Sure. So, you know, having to do all that stuff. So, and then and when they were ready, I would, you know, progress them into, you know, Pilates under supervision, you know, so they would, you know, be working out and, you know, putting it all together that way. So we make it, you know, this whole program.
Awesome. You know, and
comprehensive.
And even like as they, so people didn't like workers' comp. Was this coming out of pocket though, or was it insurance or?
No, well, when I'm talking about people didn't like workers' comp, I'm talking about therapists.
Oh, understood.
Because they wouldn't get enough money.
Understood.
I mean, you know, the performers, you know, they didn't have money. You know, I mean, you know, modern dance, who, you know, show me a modern dancer that, you know, has money that, you know,
right.
That unless their parents are wealthy,
sure.
You know, they're out working and they're, you know, I remember, you know, I made almost four times as much money my first year as a PT than I ever did as a dancer.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I danced for about 10 years. Wow. And, you know, I was, you know, the big fish in the little pond in Philly. I was a male dancer. So I got, you know, I worked, but there was, you know, work doesn't mean you made a lot of money. You just worked and I was happy to work.
That's true.
You know, I was dancing. So that, you know, that's what it was all about.
What style of dancing were you dancing?
I was a modern dancer. Uh-huh. You know, I've danced pretty much, you know, with almost every dance company, you know, modern company in Philly at the time. You know, I mean, that you know, there was not all of them, but quite a few of them.
Wow.
You know.
Okay, so you started up at Steps. You expanded to 890 Broadway. At some point, you said you had four clinics?
Well, no, I had more than that because I also, you know, like... when Robbins went on tour, one of somebody that was after me in PT school, mm-hmm. Mindy Boner, you know, she had graduated, moved to LA, but she, you know, sort of, she followed my footsteps with the PT and the athletic training and all that stuff. So, you know, I sort of said, I was like, do you want this gig? And she said, sure. And so they went to LA and then they went on tour. And I said, well, when you get back, let me know. And if you want to do something. So I basically, you know, set her up as a clinic in LA. Mm-hmm. And then Lori Coleman, who was the student that helped, you know, helped me get connected with Pilates at Purchase. She also, when I came to New York, her roommate moved out. So I was living with her, you know, in an apartment on the 73rd. And then she got accepted into PT school Temple. Mm-hmm. And so she went down to Temple. And then when she finished, she moved to Seattle. So I went out to Seattle and helped her set her and Lauren Stefan, who was a Pilates, you know, was more the Pilates person, you know, set up, you know, and, you know, I was partners with them in an office there. And then I opened clinics, three clinics in, in Chicago area, where Evanston was one. Mm-hmm. And it was a Pilates studio and PT. And then we opened up a clinic at the Hubbard Street facility, because I was in the 90s, early to mid 90s, I started going on tour with Hubbard Street when they would go out of the country.
Oh, wow.
So I would try, you know, I traveled to all over Europe and South America with them.
Who would take your shows?
Huh?
Who would take your shows when you're gone?
Well, I had clinics, and I had, you know, since I had, you know, like I said, I had 7 or 8 PTs. So They would cover for me when I was, you know, out of town. It's a little harder now because I don't have, you know, I have just people covering for me, but there's PTs willing to cover and want to do this work all the time. So, you know, so that's what I would do. And then, you know, I opened up in Philadelphia, you know, I had the Pennsylvania Ballet as well. So I had, you know, like before 9/11, I had about almost 10 clinics.
Wow.
This was 10.
10, all under 20, performing arts PT, or?
Well, they were, yes and no. Some of them were performing arts. You know, my goal was originally, I was like, I'm going to open up and have dance medicine, you know, clinics everywhere.
Sure.
You know, it's going to be like, you know, not a franchise, but just be the place. But the reality is, mm-hmm. you know, you can't really have a full-time practice except for New York, maybe Vegas now, I don't know, right. Or Branson, you know, the places where you have a lot of shows and stuff. But all these other cities, you know, they have a ballet company and a couple of modern dance companies. And, you know, you're talking maybe 100 dancers, and, you know, if 5% are injured, it's 5 people. Can't really have a true performing arts clinic where you're, you know, basically mostly seeing performers. You know, in my clinic that's what I do. I specialize, and I only in New York I can do that. But outside of that, you couldn't.
Right.
So that dream sort of went away in a certain way, because it was just, you know, there just wasn't enough, mm-hmm. you know, business to make it work, you know, for our performing arts clinic. So they became PT clinics and Pilates studios.
Sure.
More so. I mean, LA a little bit, but even LA, you know, it's, you know, there's. It's you know, dance wise, it's nothing like New York.
Sure. So let's get into the Pilates aspect. So you said you took Pilates for the first time in around 84, right?
Well, when I first took a session, I got off the apparatus and I'm like, I couldn't believe how I felt. I was like, why isn't this everywhere?
Right.
And I said to myself, if I ever get a chance, you know, this needs to be everywhere. If I get a chance, I'm going to do something. And I got a chance, you know, in 92, I bought, you know, I mean, I incorporated Pilates. I started, you know, working with Steve. We did, you know, we did all this stuff. The business I had was called, you know, we put a business together called Synergy Exercise Systems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we taught, you know, Pilates base, because, you know, at the time we tie on the trade, the Pilates studio, the original business. I'm the fifth owner of that. But at the time I wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, it was, it, you know, Joe, when Joe passed, you know, he had a will and everything went to Clara. Mm-hmm. And then she sold it to a group of investors, you know, when she was getting too old, and they moved the studio into, because they had been in their studio was there also where they lived. It was on 54th Street, mm-hmm. 939 8th Avenue. And, you know, it was it was an old building when they moved in there, and they were there for 60 years. And it was just, you know, in not in the best of shape, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. So the investors like, well, let's, you know, modernize and like get it, you know, get into a building that had air conditioning and, you know, clean and new and elevators, you know, the whole bit.
Yeah.
So a group of investors bought out Clara. And it was Romana was, you know, not in the beginning, but soon after, within a year or two, I have to look at the records for sure. But, you know, she ended up becoming 50% owner, and they ran, you know, and they ran the studio until, you know, and then Clara passed in the 77, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then in 1980, that's when they, you know, Romana and, you know, the company trademarked the name Pilates and the Pilates studio, mm-hmm. you know, to try to protect the interest, because people were starting to, you know, use it and everything else. And, you know, because they were trained. And then it was bought out by Isotoner in 85, which is, you know, the guys who make the gloves.
Make the gloves?
Yeah. Isotoner gloves. You ever hear of Isotoner gloves?
Oh,
they used to be very well known. I guess things have changed. But that's who, you know, but then Isotoner was bought out by Sara Lee. And I guess he, you know, they were like, this is your private gym and it's not making money. You got to get rid of it. Hmm. So then they sold it to Wee Tai Home, which was another student. And he had all these grand ideas about, you know, putting a TV in front of the reformer. This is back in 1986 putting a TV in front of the reformer so people could, you know, watch the video and work out. So he was way ahead of his time when it comes to what we're doing, because what are people are doing today?
Peloton.
You're right.
Modern day.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's what he's, you know, so he had that idea way back then, but it didn't happen. And then it didn't work, and he ended up having to, you know, close down and just rents and money, and it just wasn't going. So in 92, I purchased the business from him, including the trademarks and the archives and everything else like that. So, and then I started, you know, building the Pilates up as well. You know, I protected the trademark, and I was the bad guy because I was telling people they couldn't use the name because, you know, I bought a federally registered trademark. And if, you know, the law basically states that if you don't protect it, you lose it. So I had to send the letters. Otherwise I would have lost the trademark. And that's part of what I bought when I bought the business. So, you know, that's what I did. And I was the bad guy in the Pilates community for doing that. And then, you know, I tried to work with a manufacturer for quite a few years, and, you know, he just wouldn't do it. So then he kept using the name, and I asked him to stop, and he wouldn't. So we went back and forth, and finally I sued him, and then I ended up losing. So now Pilates is generic. So.
Interesting. I did not know that.
That happened in 2000. You know, and then, you know, then there was 2000, you know, 9/11. And that's when I was like, you know, I'm done. So I just, you know, went down to a small, you know, like I said, went down to one clinic.
Right.
And, you know, just spent time with my kids and family and, you know, went from there.
Important too, I would say.
Oh, very important. Yeah. You know, well, you know, I have three Eagle Scouts. I was the Scout Club Master and the Scout Master. So, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, working with them and, you know, helping them, you know, become really amazing guys.
That's awesome. And you also, I mean, with the trademark and the archives and everything that you purchased in 92, you also have his original equipment, right?
Well, so the story behind that is that when I, you know, in the archives, there's a fair amount of there's some film and there's photographs of Joe at when he was at Jacob's Pillow, but also of Ted Sean and Barton Mumaw, his partner, mm-hmm. working out in Joe's studio.
Wow.
So I took it up to Norton Owen, who is the archivist, in 97, mm-hmm. you know, thinking, well, you know, I was like, well, you know, I'll loan you what I have for your, so people can come and observe what, you know, what he did here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can loan me what you have. So we made a deal. And when I was there, he says, well, you know, by the way, you know, his property's for sale. And I think it has all the equipment in it.
Joe Pilates' property?
Yeah.
Wow.
because what, you know, the story, you know, the way that Norton tells it is that when Joe was there, he kept trying to talk Ted Shawn into, you know, forget the dance. Let's turn this into a health spa. Uh-huh. You'll do better. Right.
Yeah.
And Ted was like, no. So, I mean, and Joe was there for, you know, from the 40s to the 50s.
Right.
Or I guess late, early 50s. Well, in 1948, he purchased 56 acres, literally almost around the corner.
Wow.
And he, you know, and he built a studio. There was a small little house, and on the property, there's a big area where it looks like, you know, there's a cement, or not a cinder block, foundation that's falling apart now, but it, you know, it looks like he was going to probably, you know, build another studio for like mat work and things like that. It just never happened. So the equipment was there, and I went to the, you know, I was like, well, I want to see it. So I came and looked at the property, and, you know, I basically told the realtor, I said, you know, if you're, I'm interested in the equipment, but I don't really want the property. So you can tell them I'll buy the equipment. And the owner came back and said, if you want the equipment, you got to buy the property. Because it had been on the market for like 3 years. Oh, so, you know, he wanted, you know, that was one of the housing busts back then in 1997.
Sure.
So nobody was buying stuff. So I offered him a much lower price than the asking price. And he took it, and he took the financing. So in hindsight, I'm kind of happy I did, because, you know, the studio and the house, the people who had bought the property and the person I bought it from, he was the second owner. They never touched the prop, the other, the studio and Joe's and house, because the people who had bought the property first built another house here. So the studio and the house, the roof was leaking. There was water damage. There was, you know, rodents, there was bugs, ants, and, you know, I mean, just lots of damage.
Yeah, yeah.
And most likely, if it would have been somebody else, they would have just thrown everything out and tore it down.
Sure.
And so I have just finished this summer. There's a few little things that need to be done, but I've just finished, with the help from a lot of people in the Pilates community, bringing Joe's studio back to life. You know, it's basically, and it's going to be half museum and half working studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Joe's original apparatus that he made that in there, and half of it, which is, you know, there's his original reformer, there's original Cadillac, there's the massage table, there's high chair, a lot of original stuff. And then on the other side, I've got old grots, you know, from the 90s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before it's become, you know, now who knows what people are making? They're making all sorts of variations. So I'm trying to keep it, you know, as close to the source as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so the working studio is going to, you know, is open. And I've already, you know, seen a few, you know, done a few sessions up here with people. And, you know, and then the other thing that I'm doing here, you know, along with another Pilates teacher, Elaine Ewing, we're doing Pilates at the Pillow conferences twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm doing is bringing back Joe's original equipment, because since I have it, a lot of his original stuff, I've found working with another manufacturer to reproduce it as close to, you know, what he did as possible. And then because of the archives, I have, you know, a lot of the information about how to do the exercises from, you know, either pictures or and pictures in writing and things like that. And so we're sort of bringing that back.
Wow.
You know, one little pieces at a time, and doing that type of thing. So, you know, it's been, well, you know, a lot of fun.
Yeah. I hope and, those conferences are archived too.
Well, we have, you know, we haven't filmed them, but let's put it this way. You know, we just had to postpone the one that was supposed to be done in the spring of 2000. So we're going to do the spring of 2022. So it's going to be 2 years later that we're going to finally get to, you know, hopefully get to do this conference.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be our fourth one. And, you know, before that, we didn't really have, you know, the money or the things to do the filming, but because of all this stuff that's happened with COVID, I have a camera now, and, you know, I have a nice camera and I have the recording equipment. So, you know, we're going to be recording everything.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yep. Slowly but surely.
Slowly but surely. Like everything.
Oh yeah.
I'm wondering if we missed anything. We've covered a lot.
Yeah, well, I've done, I've done over 180 Broadway shows.
Wow.
My company, and not just me. I mean, there's all the therapists who work for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I've done that. There was Juilliard and Purchase. Let me see what else, the touring shows, the amusement centers,
mm-hmm.
you know, so yeah, that's pretty much, I mean, performing arts wise, that's, pretty much, what I did. And again, a lot of it was first time ever. When I started working with, Taylor's company, the therapist hadn't worked with modern, Marika was, I think Peter, what's Peter's last name? He was the one who started ABT. I think he was the first.
Yes, I know you're
therapist.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm his last name's
last name too.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, well, but you'll find it.
Yeah.
And then Marika, and then, then I started, doing stuff. So, and that was, they were both ballet. And then I started working when I left Marika, instead of trying to hustle in on her business, I went and tried to find my own business and way to work. And in New York, that was easily done because there were modern companies. So I was the first to work with modern companies, the schools, and then, also the Broadway shows.
Yeah. Amazing. Really amazing. Thank you for all of your work.
You're welcome.
Realm. Thank you.
Well, it wasn't work.
Right.
I've enjoyed, I've had fun. I've enjoyed it. It's been, the people are amazing and other people are amazing too, but just, the characters that you meet and the different, and I've met lots of, well-known people and lots of unknown people and, they're all, working with everybody and it's great to be able to, because I can remember people like, do you miss performing? It's like, I still get to go backstage. I still get to enjoy some of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And, and for me, it's really great to do something that allows people to make the magic happen.
Sure.
And they're happy about it. And I'm happy about
sure.
it.
Sure.
One of the things about, athletic training, when I was doing athletic training, I was the dancer. So I had leg warmers, I had earrings, and, this is back in 83 and 84. And, nowadays the stuff that was said then, they'd be thrown out of school, but, I'd be on the field, in a split position as a dancer, leg warmers, waiting for, injuries to happen or legs up stretching. And, they didn't know what to do with, but,
sure.
I worked hard and I learned and I did good work. So
if you got a picture of that, share, Sean.
What?
You and the splits and the leg warmers on the field waiting for injuries to happen.
Well, I don't think I have that. I have me doing the splits in front of the cadaver.
Oh, well, that is also an excellent find.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
that'd be excellent. I'm curious to know where you would like dance medicine to go in the next couple of, the next generation, let's call it.
Well, I don't know. I think it, as far as where it needs to go, it's just, as long as we're taking care of people and it's not about the money and it's, the problem is, we're between a rock and a hard place because insurance is getting more and more about, you have to validate whatever you do.
Sure. Yeah.
And, the problem is, so most injuries, how many sessions you get? 10, 12?
Right, if you're lucky, 4.
If you're lucky, right? Well, you can't fly after an injury with only 8 or 10 sessions.
Right.
You can get back to sitting at a desk. You can get back to walking and doing normal life stuff, but, dancers are not normal. People don't pay to see normal. I say this all the time. People don't pay to see normal.
Sure.
It's a whole different reality. So that, when you're looking at that, you just made me remember something, which is that, at the APTA, the Performing Arts Special Interest Group, I was the one who started that and was the first, and I was the first president.
Hmm.
Then it got political and I left.
Sure.
But, but yeah, so because I started doing round tables first. That was one of the things I went to the you know, I went to the PT, I went to, you know, the conferences, the combined sections, the national meeting, and I really tried to push to get, you know, some sort of performing arts thing to happen and find other people who are interested in things like that to really make something happen. And, you know, that's happened and that's growing. And, you know, I mean, there, I know you're doing this for iAdams, but there's, you know, they should all work together. And I think, you know, going forward, you know, it's finding a way to really be able to still do the hands-on manual work and do it, you know, in a way that allows the dancers to get better and not be limited, you know, because, well, you're at 80%, so you're good. Well, dancers can't be at 80%. They have to be, you know, as close to that 100 as possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I think that's what needs to be, you know, fought for, because otherwise, and as far as, you know, PT itself and what we can do, you know, I think there's lots of, you know, as dance is evolving. I mean, you know, there's the, you know, when you look at that cross-pollinization, you know, it's getting, you have to do more and more crazier and crazier stuff. You know, when I watch some of these TV shows and I see what some of these kids are doing, it's like, you know, you only need to slip once.
Right.
You know, and that's the end, you know, or a real problem and having to take care of that. And, you know, how do we, you know, also do that with education? Because when you're 14 to 20, it's never going to happen to you, you know, or it's never going to happen to you until it happens to you. And then it's too late. So I don't know. I think it's, you know, looking at that education process and figuring out how best to do that. Mm-hmm. And realizing that it's not going to be easy. It's not simple. And you know, every, you know, couple of years, you have a whole new generation that you got to start it all over again with.
Yep.
You know, and they don't last, right? Dancer. I mean, how many 40-year-old dancers do you know that are working full time?
Fair.
Right. So, you know, it's a limited, you know, opportunity. And you know, there are some dancers who can do it and they modify. I mean, you know, like Brishnikov, I mean, he danced for a long time, but you know, he got everything choreographed for his good leg.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And he had PT 2 or 3 hours a day to make sure he could continue to do that, you know, but he could afford to do that. Most dancers can't, you know? So, I mean, it, you know, we'll, you know, as far as where dance medicine is going, I hope it continues and it doesn't, you know, lose, you know, it's like the Miller Institute was a great thing, but the money disappeared and it disappeared.
Sure.
You know, so it's just trying to make sure that it's still there and people are still doing it. And, you know, I mean, I stopped taking students because I just don't have the facility to do it. And that, you know, and I did over 100 some students. So, you know, I was like, I gave back enough, you know, but, you know, I'm more than happy to, you know, if somebody's interested and wants to come learn, happy to spend some time with them and, you know, teach them some of the things that I've developed over, you know, the 35 years of doing all this work.
Amazing. Well, thank you again very much for everything you've contributed mm-hmm. and are continuing to contribute. Important to note. I appreciate you being here.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. You know, I'm happy to, you know, I think you got a good story.
I think that was pretty much most
of what it was. So yeah. I think, you know, should be interesting for those who don't know.
I would agree.